Blog Talk Radio.
We said a prayer for Cousin Michael in Iraq. We're all aware that he may never make it back. We talked about the way we missed his stupid joke. And how...
Okay, well, let me cut my intro off as I have my guest on the line. Hello, David.
Yes, hey, Alex.
Hey, how you doing, my friend? Thanks for joining us tonight.
No problem at all.
So you are David Webb. You are, you've been doing a whole lot of everything lately, from Fox News to XM, XM Patriot Satellite on Sirius and XM, and you've been doing a whole bunch of other things. You actually had a 28th anniversary yesterday for radio series, Z100 or KTU?
Z100.
Z100. How did that go yesterday?
That was a lot of fun, man. Good to see some people I haven't seen in a long time.
Things change, huh? It's been so many years. Well, a lot's changed over the past couple of years. I remember hearing you at different Tea Party events and things like that, and seeing you come up on different contributions with working with Kellen Guida, who's now in D.C., when you guys launched Tea Party 365 New York and parkbench.com. Now you're working on so many different things. Please tell us exactly what your main focus are right now, or top three things that you're doing right now that people should know about, or would want them to know about.
Well, my main focus right now is, you know, I've got my Sirius XM Patriot Satellite show. That's, you know, the main goal there is to, frankly, get the truth out to Americans and get them involved in the process. You know, it's one thing, in my opinion, to just do talk radio where the talk host is putting out the points. I like to get more interactive. I like to bring on the experts, bring in the congressmen, bring in the economists, the business leaders, people who will bring attention to it, bring the facts to it, and then bring the listeners in on it, because learning is supposed to be an interactive experience.
Absolutely, and I think I share the same vision with my show, because there's only so much that I know that I can talk about, and I know, for in my case at least, people don't listen to my show to hear me. They want to hear, as you mentioned, the experts, people that are in there, they're in the fight. The U.S. Congressman, for example, I've had Senator Jim DeMento, and I have Michelle Bachmann, that actually told us different things that the media actually never reported to us, and I think that's what's so great about internet radio, satellite radio. There's different things that you can say and do that traditional radio and traditional media don't do or just don't want to do. I think that's a very big plus.
Yeah, it is. I mean, look, we're in a time right now, Alex, when Americans have started to become more aware, more politically active. The Tea Parties, for instance, may be the focal point of all of this. But there are more people interested, involved, and concerned about what's going on in this country and around the world than there are in the Tea Party movement, and they are taking action. They're not just sitting on the sidelines, and it's a simple action from learning for themselves to what we really need to do, which is share the facts with other people, because, you know, a smarter populace demands more from its political leaders, demands more from itself. And that's when any culture or any country does better.
I agree 100%. I think being able to get the right people on the show and the right message out there, not carefully crafted, not easily manipulated, that kind of information, but you got to get the information out to the people. I don't see the media doing their job. And I actually just had Jeff Poore on from Daily Caller. He's a contributor there, and he was working for Media Research Center before that. So he's seen a whole bunch of different things and how the media changes different things and how they slant everything. From your experiences, and you work with Fox News, is Fox News really different than other news media, or are they trying to be any different? What's your take on that?
Well, Fox is clearly different from the other outlets in that what they've done is they have a hybrid initially of hard news. They have the hard news shows, and they have commentary shows. But what Fox has done, you know, people will debate the model and whether there is a bias or not. Fox News has proven themselves time and time again that they are able to draw an audience that's larger than the conservative audience that the left likes to attack them as drawing. The fact is that the Fox News audience is so large, it includes independents, Democrats, unaffiliated people politically, and that's just the numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. I think Fox News has done wonders for a lot of different people, and I think they're if not, if they haven't surpassed already, they're about to surpass CNN and World News and live coverage at the drop of a dime from their coverage of the pirate season was last year during the summertime when they were right on top of that, Egypt and all these other types of situations that they were just right on for. What's the most exciting part of your day? Is it talking to everyday people and seeing that the American people are not what people say they are? They're not lazy, they're not this, they're not that, they're not all these negative images and caricatures, but they really are genuinely good people that want to be good, but they feel they're not being allowed to be good. Is that what you see from people?
Yeah, I mean, I see a couple of things. I see people who have not been, one, getting the right information for a long time, and people who willingly admit that they have not been diligent in seeking out the right information. You know, for a while, what we did was we became, as I put in one of my articles probably about a year ago, kind of fat, happy, cynical, comfortable where we were, not as concerned about the bigger picture. And that happened as a nation. But right now, one of the if you want to call it the best parts of my day or what I see every day, are people who begin to question. They begin to look for the facts. They're not looking at just one source. Now we've got multimedia platforms available at the drop of a dime, whether it's television, cable news, print news. There are many news operations on the web. There are many places to get your source of information right down to your smartphone. So people are taking all these sources and they're looking at it and they're saying, you know what, I'm not sure if I believe that all the way, so I'm going to check a couple more. And that's key to what's going on, and that's key to a lot of the battles we see going on in our country right now, where people are calling for accountability. You know, 80% of Americans, Alex, feel that government is broken. Well, 80% of Americans are not one party or the other. That's a combination of all groups.
Now, you've been at the front of the Tea Party organization, and you've been a spectator as well. What do you think has been, A, the best thing that's come out of the Tea Party so far, and D, what do you think the future holds for the Tea Party? Because it seems like even the revolutionaries or counter-revolution, whatever they want to call themselves, the Marxists, the Van Joneses and all them, even they're trying to use the Tea Party model, which I don't think they can duplicate because it's a genuine motion towards government, big government. They're starting to try to use this kind of platform that the Tea Party successfully used.
Right.
What do you think? Go ahead.
No, no, I mean, you hit a key point there. Look, the old saying was that the hardest thing to kill is an idea. Well, what's happened right now, if I want to put it in one word, it would be awareness. The Tea Party movement is the culmination. There was the seminal moment with Rick Santelli in 2009 on February 19th. That was that moment that galvanized it. Then we took off on the 27th, 2 years ago, the first rallies were done. But bigger than that was the fact that awareness just became part of the American psyche. The Tea Party movement's amorphous. It doesn't have a head. But what it does have is an honest grassroots base of concerned moms, of concerned dads, of concerned seniors, and a growing block of concerned youth. People who have looked at and said, you know, where is this country going? Where is the upward mobility for me? And what's in my future? And that's the beginning point of it. And the reason the Van Jones, the admitted socialists, the admitted Marxists out there, the progressive left, those people who have seen their model of government, their utopian, theoretical, elitist ideal that has failed everywhere it's ever been tried, the reason they see it as a threat is because the one thing they can't defeat is the idea. When people have woken up and said, forget it, the system's broken, we know what needs to work, And we are going to work to effect that real change. That's the challenge to the political institutions on both sides. Because for years, for decades in this country, the political institutions have played the game of who gets the most votes. And then along the way, for the most part, they are more interested, it seems, in getting reelected than looking at real long-term plans to make this country better and to sustain it. And I'm not, that's not to say there aren't good politicians, good congressmen, good senators, good leaders out there, but the institution itself has become the problem, and that institution needs to, frankly, be reformed.
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you make, I think this is a perfect example of the status quo, which isn't working, and it's the government, compassionate Republicans and conservatives, however they seem to define themselves in their policy, and the government liberals, tax and spend liberals, borrow and spend Republicans. This has been tried since for a long time, for a couple of decades now. Promises have been made, promises haven't been kept. The only ones that seem to have been kept for are special interest groups, and the ones I want to focus on right now are unions and public sector unions. And Wisconsin, we're seeing that fight play out. It's now moving over to over to Ohio, and Governor Kasich, I had him on my show when he was still running, and he was a gubernatorial hopeful. And we're seeing it in Indiana, and we're going to see it in New York, which is our state. What do you make of this deal that the unions have gotten for years, and the average benefit for a public sector employee in Wisconsin is about $38,000? That's a little insane in my eyes, I think, of the average American's eyes. What do you make of this? The status quo being challenged finally by Governor Walker?
Well, first of all, it is, again, part of what I just described. What has happened in New Jersey last year when they had school elections in the spring? The people got out and voted down for the first time in New Jersey a lot of the school funding. People wanted, you know, towns that wanted $50 million, $70 million, all this money to put into it. Well, the residents who were paying the property taxes to pay for this got up and said, hang on, money isn't the solution. And they voted down a lot of these budgets. Now, Wisconsin comes up, being the first state to have collective bargaining, something that came out of the Wagner Act. And here in Wisconsin, we have a perfect example of what the real argument is. The specious argument is the givebacks, where the union says, okay, we'll contribute 5.8% of the total cost of our pension benefits, and we'll contribute 12% of our health care. And that's of the contribution, not of their annual salaries, which they like to sell it as. Well, that's the specious argument. That's the red herring. The real issue for the unions is that they want to keep the collective bargaining structure, because the collective bargaining structure lets them get sweetheart deals where they work to get in a municipality, in a county, and then in a state, the right politicians in play. And when they elect them, they can hold them under their sway and get the deals. I mean, Governor Jim Doyle, two-term governor of Wisconsin, after he was voted out of office in November, in the lame duck session, gave the unions incredible pension benefits in the out years. And that's unsustainable. And the other thing in this, besides the fact that collective bargaining is the real goal of the unions, it's about power and control, because they'll bargain you in the next year and they'll give you something this year. But the other thing that really needs to be broken here is this defined benefit, divine contribution problem. These unions are given exorbitant Cadillac retirement packages and benefits packages to members that are being paid for by the private sector when it comes to the public workers' union. And that is unsustainable as a model. You can't continually take from one group and give it to the other. But don't... I urge everyone, do not be fooled by the, we have agreed to give you 5.8%. Well, thank you for being magnificent in your generosity, but that's not the issue. The issue is the collective bargaining structure. And note the difference here. Federal workers government unionized federal workers are not allowed to collectively bargain, and that was signed into law by Jimmy Carter and a Democratic-led Congress.
Yeah, I believe Jimmy Carter actually fired federal postal employees for striking, and this precluded the Ronald Reagan firing 15,000 air traffic control employees. So there's been history about this. Even FDR warned about collective bargaining, and I was actually arguing with somebody via Twitter a couple of days ago about this, and the only resort that the person had in the argument is that, oh, I don't care about the unions, I don't care about people. I am a person. I am a middle-class man. Both my parents are in unions. I know people in unions. I live in a very heavily unionized borough of Staten Island, New York, and, you know, Staten Island, New York is a lot of firefighters, police, sanitation, and so on. And we all understand that, you know, these people, the unionized workforce, is getting a lot more than the rest of us, and the only reason they have a job is because the rest of us are paying their taxes. And it's not to say they don't contribute to society or they're not good people. They are great people. It's just the people that are in charge of their lives and our tax dollars are Richard Trumka, are Andy Stern, who's now at a private corporation, SIGA, and a whole slew of other people that are in charge of this process.
It's also, Alex, if I can interject, a very dangerous, well-thought-out plan over the years. Here we have Craig Becker, who is now on the National Labor Relations Board. This is a guy who was a former general counsel for the SEIU, who says that companies should not have any say in whether their workers unionize, who says that small businesses as small as two employees should have the right to unionize. This is a well thought out social approach, the social philosophy of the left that has never worked, and we should be very aware that these are dangerous processes. This is a dangerous system, and it is an unsustainable system. And one other point, if I could interject this.
Absolutely.
You know, how when you look at a governor in a state, a John Corzine in New Jersey, Jim Doyle in Wisconsin, for example, they were elected by the unions. They were supported heavily by the unions. Well, that governor is supposed to represent the people of his state. So how is that governor going to represent the interests of those who get him into office and the interests of the people he is elected to serve? It's contradictory by its nature.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, what do you think is going to be the end result of this? Because at the end of the day, fiscal sanity in some regard has to happen. There's going to be protests. There's going to be, I think, maybe even a little bit of rioting. We saw the congressman from Massachusetts, a complete bonehead, advocating for violence. We're now seeing SEIU with a new theme song from the Dropkick Murphys, advocating violence against, the corrupt big bosses and, corporatists and all that kind of stuff, whatever their typical demon is. But what do you think the end result is of this? Do you think that this will trickle into the federal budgetary discussion and they're actually going to make changes to the entitlement culture? Or do you think they're going to just keep punting down and kicking that can down the road?
Well, I think there's two separate answers or possibly more, but my first two initial thoughts, let's sit at the state level for a moment. Governor Walker can't give in for a number of reasons. He cannot give in to anyone who says we're going to walk out of a vote, we're not going to do our jobs, those 14 recalcitrant Democrats who have run away from their jobs. Because if he does, then he leaves every other governor and himself open to the fact that they will do this again. So he cannot give in. This is a line in the sand moment, just from that point of view, or else you will have legislators walking away every time. That will be a moment when states will have started to take back their control. And when the people start to see some sanity, that will be when the pendulum is held for a moment. There's still a lot to battle after it. On the federal level, that sends a message to the feds that the people are standing behind Governor Walker and others and Governor Christie and all governors and even mayors out there who've stood back and said no more. And when that message keeps getting pushed up to Washington, where it's going to be a heck of a fight, because Washington is tough, it's strong, and it's ingrained. But it will continue to push that message up there, and that should be forced, especially on the congressmen when they come home and the senators, that they need to go back to Washington and fight for fiscal discipline. There's some hard choices to come in entitlements. We are going to have to cut entitlements. We are going to have to restructure. And the Republicans are playing the same game that they won't speak out on this. We have people that we're going to have to help. They're already, if you want to call it, fully in the system, seniors, and some in other cases. But Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security have to be cut at some point and restructured in a combination of factors. Raise the retirement age is one thing we have to do immediately. That will change it. We're living longer, living healthier. It's just a factor. It's a change in our lifestyle. Waste and fraud, some $60 billion a year in Medicaid and Medicare. Let's start prosecuting. Let's use technology. Let's clean it up as best we can. Let's remove that waste and fraud. Pizza parlors shouldn't be able to file as Medicaid centers, Medicare centers, and collect checks. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's more fraud and abuse than people understand, and it needs to be cleaned up, and there's people that shouldn't be profiting off of, you know, other people's tax dollars, first and foremost, but gaming the system and not being punished for it. David Webb, I want to thank you so much for coming on, especially on a Sunday. I know the Oscars are coming up. I'm not sure if you're going to watch that or not. I will not be. But I do appreciate you coming on this weekend to come on my show, talk to my audience, and share your thoughts and views.
Thank you, Alex.
All right, God bless you. Thank you so much.